This is Kate Harness for 307 Net Radio, and I'm here with Dawn Brannaman of our Family Crisis Centre here in Johnson County. Hello, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having this conversation with me.
You're very welcome, and I'm very happy to. It's Domestic Violence Awareness Month. That sounds a pretty heavy topic, but what is actually going on? Some people may know it from the Purple Ribbon. We're familiar with the Pink Ribbon for breast cancer awareness, but the Purple Ribbon, I think, actually even came ahead of that, and that's for domestic violence, and October is this designated time. What's the purpose of that?
So the purpose of Domestic Violence Awareness Month is to basically bring awareness to the issue of domestic violence, to encourage people to have those conversations, to be aware of the different tactics abusers use, how to recognize if this is happening to yourself or someone that you are close to, to get those conversations going, because unfortunately domestic violence thrives in secrecy, and there's a lot of stigma and a lot of shame associated with it. So if we're talking about it and recognize it, and we as a community say we don't want this to be happening, then kudos. That's how we win this battle.
Okay, so what exactly is domestic violence? I mean, I think we think of it maybe in perhaps two stereotypical terms. We think of it as, you know, the drunk husband coming home and hitting his wife. Is that what it is? What do you actually mean by domestic violence?
So domestic violence takes many forms, and it can happen in any relationship. So your traditional man-woman relationship, it can be same-sex relationships, it can be parent-child. Basically, it's someone asserting power and control over another person. Stereotypically, yes, you see the posters of the woman who's cowering in the corner with a black eye. And yes, physical violence does take place. But abusers have kind of grown to know that it's more difficult to hide the physical abuse than it is the emotional abuse. So you have emotional abuse, you have financial abuse, you have manipulation, gaslighting. These are all kind of terms that help create that power and control over the person. So, you know, so it's not just the big burly drunk guy coming home and, you know, beating up on his wife. It's the person's coming home and saying, why are you wearing that? Why did you fix that? That's not what I wanted for dinner. Or making veiled threats. You know, if you don't shape up, or if you think you're going to leave, I'm going to take the kids. You're never going to see them. So it's all different aspects of...
Okay, so you say emotional abuse. Just what would be a healthy non-emotional relationship? Because sometimes that sounds like just sort of being in a committed partnership with somebody. You know, you kind of have a bit of to and froing of kind of what's okay, what's not okay, and you agree that between the two of you. How's this different?
So in a healthy relationship, if you have an argument, you both are coming... With your ideas, with your opinions, with your concerns, you know, this happened, this is how I feel, we need to change this, this can't continue, okay? In an unhealthy relationship, an argument is the abuser, and if I say he or she...
Those are interchangeable.
Right.
Right, okay.
So traditionally, we predominantly work with a lot of women who are victims of domestic violence, but we also work with men who are victims as well. But so if I say that, understanding it could be any gender that is impacted by this. So in this unhealthy relationship, the abuser might be making the person feel small, not valued, chipping away at their self-esteem, making fun of flaws that they or perceived flaws. Like I said, those veiled threats. And then in an argument, too, usually in a healthy relationship, if you have a discussion, you're usually not calling each other names. or using threats or throwing things, you know, violent turmoil. In a healthy relationship, you're having a discussion. You may not like what's being said, but you're accepting that information and you're agreeing to, I'll take it into consideration, and if I need to adjust my behaviors, I will do so. If not, then we're going to agree to disagree, or we're going to determine that this relationship isn't compatible and we need to move on.
So are we seeing this kind of thing happening in our community? I mean, is there a lot of it? Do you think there's more after COVID? I mean, we don't live in a community that got locked up and locked down as many other communities across the nation did. But, you know, I think everybody feels some sort of residual effect of the unsettling nature and the uncertainty that COVID brought with it. But also we're in a time of economic challenge. Things, you know, people don't have as much money as they had, and it's costing a lot more. Are you seeing a difference in domestic violence or domestic difficulties?
I would say yes, but there's another stereotype that kind of falls in that only people of low income or I'm not sure what the correct term would be, but domestic violence works across all systems, all levels. So if you are financially set, you can still be in an abusive relationship. So financial hardships, basically these may be stressors that may provoke additional incidents, but domestic violence on its foundational level is all about power, asserting power and control over the victim. So the people that claim, well, I only acted that way because I was jealous, or I only acted that way because I was drunk, or I only acted that way is because you did this. It's like, no. Because they're saying then that, well, I like to say too, if I'm working with a victim and this person says, well, if I just wouldn't do that, he wouldn't get upset and then we wouldn't have this problem. And then I go, well, what if he's, let's say he's shopping at the grocery store and the checker rings up something wrong, and does he ever just fly into a rage and slaps her and, you know, goes, no, because that's self-control. So this person is picking and choosing how he's going to assert that power and control over you. So the power and control, we can take that another step into the patterns of abuse. And so a lot of it is, if the Duluth model is, you have your tension building stage. So you've got this person that every little thing, every nitpicking, why did you do that? The house is a mess. Why are the kids doing this? Blah, blah, blah. And then you just feel this, you feel like you're walking on eggshells because you're like, you know, when's the blow up going to happen? Then you have the blow up. And this could result in physical abuse. A lot of times it's a perceived threat. It might be you're standing up against the wall and the person punches the wall next to you. Next time that's going to be you. It might be taking the aggression out on the family pet or the children. Children are also victims of domestic violence. Basically, it's labeled as child abuse. And then so you have this big blow up. And then you have they call it the honeymoon period, where I'm so sorry, I can't believe I did that, I just lost control, let me make it up to you, blah, 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 blah. And then things are good for a couple of days, and then you're just stuck in that cycle.
So it's like a cycle. It goes round and round and round. And what happens if you've grown up in a family like that, or in a household like that? You know, do you replicate those expectations when you're an adult as well? Do we see a pattern repeating?
So we are molded by our environments and our role models. So if we grow up in a household where if I grew up watching my father beat up my mother, I'm learning this is, for me, this might just be normal. Okay, this is, oh, so it's normal for, in a relationship, the dominant person is, you know, if you fall out of line, it's okay to use physical aggression or call names or control them financially, however, okay? If I am a male growing up in this household watching my father beat up on my mother, then I'm learning this is how I'm supposed to treat. This is how I can, you know, I have to perform or behave in this manner. However, that's not a hard set rule, okay? So children are resilient. And if they have access to healthy role models and safety supports, they do not have to fall into those roles. So it's not guaranteed. You are at greater risk, yes, if you grow up in a household where you witness abuse of physical or emotional or financial abuse, then you are at risk of either becoming an abused person or becoming the abuser.
Okay. And so does it always stay at the kind of level that it starts, or does it get better or worse, or does domestic violence go through kind of seasons? You know, is there any, you know, if he hit you once, will he hit you again? Is that for sure? Or if she hurt you once, will she hurt you again? What is that?
So that's interesting, because what we saw is this pattern of because there are more laws protecting people against these atrocities, that they usually will use physical aggression once. And that is, so they'll do the punch, the slap, something to cement the, I mean business. Do not challenge my authority. And then after that, they use that veiled threat. You know, and it might be posturing. They might, during an argument, they might nose to nose with them or chest bump them into the wall without ever really touching them, but just implying, I have the ability to harm you if I choose to. And historically I have, so you know I'm capable of it. Okay.
So why don't people who find themselves in abusive relationships like this, why don't they just leave?
That's my favorite question, and I get that a lot, okay? So I usually start out with, so if you're on a first date and let's say it's me. I'm on this first date, this attractive guy, I'm loving it. We're having this great conversation and I'm clumsy. I go to grab the pepper, knock the glass of water into his lap. He stands up and slaps me, calls me all sorts of names. Is there going to be a second date? No. Oh, no, okay, but it doesn't happen like that. You meet this person, and this person is like your soulmate, so attentive to you, so showering you with praise and gifts, and wants to spend time with you, wants to know everything about you, everything, like, texts you all, how do you do, you're on my mind, I just wanted to see how you're doing, and you're just like, oh, this is where we're meant for each other. And it's usually fast and furious. Like within 2 weeks, you're talking about moving in together. Yes, like this person, I can't believe it took this long to meet you. And basically it's a grooming process, scary enough. And because they're getting information about you. They're learning what your likes are, what your fears are, what if you had hardships in your past. Because then they're using this information, because then they know that this is how they're going to manipulate you.
So it's not that they really like you. It's that they see you as somebody that they can manipulate and hurt. Is that how it works? And so there is a type of person that seeks out relationships that are like that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Because basically it's... Really, there is no love, because, I mean, really, if you love someone, why would you wouldn't treat them like that? So this person, the abuser in this relationship, they view that person as a tool, as property.
A subject.
As a means to, you're just here to provide for me. You will meet my needs as I insist, as I dictate. And so there's really, and they're always saying, well, can abusers change? And I'm like, why would they? Because they're so caught up in that entitlement. It's like they would have to relinquish that power and control. And they're not going to do that. So, because you see that long after, let's say, a victim decides to finally break free of the cycle of this abuse, of this torment that they've been living under. So they break free, which creates a dynamic that is basically they're at most risk of being killed at that point, because you are ultimately challenging their power and control. So the person has fled. The abuser now transitions from domestic abuser to stalker. How dare you leave me? You're not going to find another person. I'm going to make it so difficult for you. I'm going to torment you. I'm going to blow up your phone. I'm going to show up wherever you're at. So it's like 90% of stalking incidents, the person that's being stalked it's usually someone that they've either been in a relationship or they've some kind of interaction. So we see that a lot with these domestic violence cases where the victim breaks through. They're now trying to transition into survivor mode, and they're being stalked by their previous partner.
So what you're saying is that abuse can lead to stalking, can lead to homicide.
Yes.
That's very alarming. But that's why I suppose you think that people need to get out of those abusive relationships as early as they possibly can. What do you do? I mean, if you're in that kind of a relationship, what do you do? I mean, you've got a life together. Presumably your income is entangled together. You've got maybe have pets together, a home together, maybe children together. You know, your lives are all wrapped up together, even if they're not happy. How do you break away?
So that is difficult, and it's not an easy decision. And basically, when I'm working with someone, I tell them you're going to make decisions that are best for you at the time. So it may not be ideal. Like if I'm looking at it going, you need to leave, this is unsafe. But at the time, they're like, no, if I leave right now, that's going to put me at greater harm. I don't have a plan. Because really, you decide to leave, and if he's controlling all the finances. He has access to all the bank accounts. If you are permitted to work, then pretty much you might be given an allowance. Here's money, go buy food for the house, and this is all you get. So, and in Buffalo, we don't have a shelter, so you leave. Your name is not on the title, so if you try to drive away in the vehicle, he can turn you in for stealing. You have no money, and you're just thinking, where do I go now? And in a lot of cases, these victims are relocated. So you met this wonderful Prince Charming in this state, and then all of a sudden you systematically are being separated, with you know, isolated from your support systems. Because I don't like your parents. I always feel like they're judging me. We're not going over there for dinner anymore. Just turns into an argument, and then this goes on and on and on, and you're like, you try to fight it, but then it's like, oh, it's so exhausting. If I do go see my parents and I come back, then I get grilled, or if I try to go out with my friends, I get grilled. Who are you talking to? Are you talking to other guys? So it's just easier if I just stay home and hang out with him. And then all of a sudden things are getting kind of rocky in this other state. So then all of a sudden he comes home, hey, I've got a fresh start, we're going to move to Wyoming, I've got a job, it'll be, we don't know anybody there, it'll be a fresh start for us, nobody will be meddling with us, it'll be great. So now she's transported to Buffalo, Wyoming. She lands here, she doesn't know anybody. They may be living out of town. She's not allowed to work. You don't need to work. I'll take care of that. Here's your allowance. Go buy food, that kind of stuff. And then the physical aggression, the emotional abuse, and there might be kids involved. So then what do? I'm in another state. I haven't been allowed to contact my parents, or maybe they were so frustrated I feel like they're not going to support me anymore, so I feel like I'm stuck. So if anything, Domestic Violence Awareness Month also promotes there are programs. Our program can help these individuals.
So let's talk about that for a minute. You're based in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us your address and where to find you?
Okay. So we serve all of Johnson County. So we provide services to KC and all residents everywhere, okay, in Johnson County. And then we also work with out-of-staters if they're trying to get to another location. We can provide assistance as well. So our address here is 255 East Fetterman. We're right along the creek. We have been here for 20-plus years, I think. And so our role is to help these individuals who think that there's nothing that can be done. We can help them. We are a small program, but we like to say we're small and mighty.
So, I mean, you're very conveniently located in downtown, but if you've been groomed and, you know, you're being kind of watched and your life has become as isolated as you've described, you know, you might think twice about parking your car and walking in through the front door. What do you do to kind of help retain privacy and anonymity for people who might be fearful?
Yeah, perfect. So, if it's safe for them to contact us, I've met people off-site. So, wherever that may be, go hang out in the library, go down to the park, go wherever that they are most comfortable, or if it's just safer for them to have these conversations on the phone, then we can help them to kind of develop a plan. Usually it's first is, how safe are you? That's usually one of my first questions. Are you safe right now? Because if you are not safe, like if this person is fearful that their partner's going to come home and kill them, then it's like, we need 911. That's your... Get police involved.
But wouldn't that just make them more angry? And then when they do come back, you've raised your risk even higher. I mean, people often say, well, I don't understand why she just didn't leave. Why didn't she leave? He hit her 3 times and she's still with him. And I know, you know, and he's probably hit her more than that, or whatever, whatever the abuse has been.
So...
Why can't people just leave like that, you know? And it seems, we talked about that already, but it seems that you can't win.
There is that, yes. So law enforcement and our legal system is not the cure, the do-all. There are sometimes it works really well for us and sometimes not so well. So basically we work with everybody individually, what is best for them. So if they are at immediate risk, like if they're calling me and saying, he is banging down my door, trying to get, that's call 911, okay? If they're like, things are escalating, he's at work right now, what can I do? So then we develop a safety plan with them. And they're in charge of that. And that's very important because for most victims, their voice has been taken away from them, their power has been taken away from them, and the last thing they need is for some advocate coming in and telling them what they need to do, okay? They know what's best for them, and when they have made that decision that it's time, I know I need to leave this, and it's not an easy decision to make, but what can I do to help you? What can we do to assist you so that you can break away safely? When you have kids involved, it's a very complicated issue because 10 out of 10 times that abusive partner is going to say, if you leave,
I'm having the kids.
I'm taking the kids. You will never see them. I will call DFS and tell them what a terrible mother you are and you've done this and this and this, or he's got all the money. I'll hire lawyers. You'll never see those kids again.
So can you give reassurance to someone who's at the receiving end of those kinds of threats?
tell them, this kind of gets into what I can do is I can put them in touch with the Wyoming Coalition Against Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. They have funds and lawyers on staff that the very first thing I can do is get them in touch with one of the attorneys. Talk to them, see what your options are, okay? Because we're not lawyers here. I can't help them present motions to the court. Basically, custody would have to be established and whatnot. But we tried to tell them every threat that is being made, if you could be saying the same things to that person, I mean, if you have that mindset, okay? But it's usually a mother's greatest fear is losing her children. And so kids, unfortunately, become pawns and a way to keep the victim, nope, you're not leaving because you don't want to take these kids. And then also, where am I going to, I'm going to uproot my children? They go to school here. They have friends here. Where am I going to go? Am I going to be able to find a place? This kind of stuff. Worst case scenarios, we have helped women and their children flee the town and get to a safe, unknown location for stability, you know, just to get them away, get them out of sight, let things so that they can make plans, get to support systems, things of that nature. If someone wants to leave and stay in the community, right now we're facing a renting crisis. It's hard to find rentals. It's hard to do that. But if we get lucky and we can find one and they can afford it, we can help them with their first month's rent, help them get in, get stabilized. Our community has been very, very helpful in, if I put a little plea out on Facebook, hey, furniture, they'll rally. I've got people calling all the time. Hey, we got this donation. Can you do this, this, and this? So there's a lot of caring people in this community that if we need to, we can get somebody set up rather quickly.
Okay. Well, we've talked a lot about what to do, you know, how domestic violence presents itself and what to do if it's you in that. What happens if you think that it's a friend of yours or your neighbor or something, you hear these things happening or you see these things happening, you know, what do you do for a friend, maybe even a friend who doesn't want to realize that, who doesn't want to see that it really is an abusive relationship and not the loving relationship that it's pretending to be? What do you do about something like that?
Okay, so if you're noticing that this is happening or you just suspect, do not be surprised if you have that conversation. Hey, I'm worried about you. I don't think he treats you well. That if that person then becomes defensive and they start to try to protect the abuser, because again, it's that secrecy. And the shame of this going on and fearful, oh gosh, if he finds out I've been talking to you about this, it's going to be worse for me at home. Okay? So be prepared for that reaction. So it might just be a, hey, I can just get a sense that something's not right. There is help. And, you know, if it's safe for you to give them our information, you have to be very careful. Like, I hardly ever give a victim my business card because they take that back home or then who's this? Who are you talking to? You know, we want to make sure that they stay safe. But conversations, hey, there's people down at the crisis center. You might be able to maybe have a conversation with them or give them a call and see what might be happening. You don't have to do this alone. You don't have to, if you ever need anything, I'm here to help you. If you ever need to reach out, if you just need a safe place to come to, give me a call. Okay? And be prepared to, a lot of support systems get burned out because it's unfortunately the statistics shows that victims will leave and return to their abuser on average 9 times before they make the break for good. Okay? So, and it's for us watching this person that we care about go through this, it's like watching a car wreck in slow motion. And the emotional toll it takes on you, but the abuser is banking on support systems are going to burn out. Okay, so it's key that if they do make that decision, A, we believe them, because a lot of abusers put on a super great performance in the community around town. I'm a good person. Look at this. I'm very active in the community. I do this and this and this. And, you know, no one would ever suspect that I'm this monster behind doors. Okay?
So is that where the phenomenon of man-hater has come from? Is it those sorts of people that have described women who maybe kind of either accuse men, or who basically, you know, kind of point them out, and they're themselves then accused of being man haters? Is that where that phrase comes from?
I guess.
I mean, there's been a lot of conversation about you know, false accusations, women falsely accusing men of sexual abuse, especially, you know, just because they want to kind of bring him down. Is there anything in that, in this area too?
In my experience, when working with someone who has been sexually assaulted, it is the most underreported crime, because when you open up that door, when you make that report, unfortunately, a lot of times it does not favor well for the victim. They're the ones, why? Why did you do that? Why were you doing that? Why did the blah, blah, blah? It's like
so the responsibility. The reporting victim is put as much on trial, and it's a deeply personal.
And it's, you know, so it's like when people say, well, why don't they report? Because it is, yeah, it's not a fun process. It is an emotional roller coaster. Your safety is not guaranteed. You know, if you're dealing with an individual who's maybe not trained in domestic violence and stuff, then the victim might be deemed the aggressor because they finally just fought back, and now the abuser's like, look at this, I've done nothing, and she's just all over me, and blah blah blah. Okay, so it's really a very complicated issue that with no easy answer, and with each decision that's made, there are pros and cons to it, and so we just try to help the victim as best we can and follow their lead. What is your decisions? What are your choices? What would you like to do? How can we help you?
Okay. Well, thank you. We've talked a lot, covered a lot of very important areas, you know, falling under domestic violence and why it is and what we can do to help. Would you just like to wrap up by reminding us of your telephone number here and how people can reach you?
Okay, so our number here is 684-2233, and we are here Monday through Thursday, 9 to 4, and on Fridays we are 9 to noon in the afternoon by appointment. We also, if you call that number after hours, we have volunteer on-call advocates. So if you have questions or need assistance, you can call that number and you'll be routed to one of our volunteer advocates.
Right, so somebody can call you anytime and get a live person at the end of the phone.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much indeed for your time, and good luck with the rest of the month. Dawn Brannaman from the Family Crisis Centre. Thank you.
Thank you.